try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out.
Welcome back, and joining us is our mercenary geologist, Mickey Folk. Mickey, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing well. Enjoying the spring-like weather in New Mexico.
Now, the last time I talked to you, you were in British Vancouver.
Well, that's right. I was in Vancouver for about 3 weeks with a jaunt to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, that didn't turn out so well for my team, but we still had a good time. Went back to Vancouver and then finally made it back here after about a month.
But don't you also spend time in Colorado, or are you from Colorado?
No, not at all. Got the farm in New Mexico, originally from the Ozarks in Missouri. Explains the hillbilly accent, right?
Nah, you don't have a hillbilly accent. Hey,
my girlfriend says when I talk to you, we both talk Southern, so.
You know, it's funny. When I head up north, like to New York or something, and we have a tendency to lay it on thick for those people. But now that you mention that, I have a friend of mine from, well, I have several friends from Louisiana, but this one guy in particular, and he talks just as normally as you and I do, but if we ever run across a fella Cajun down there, I mean, within 4 or 5 seconds, I can't understand a word he's saying.
Well, you know, I tend to assume accents, too. When I go back to Missouri, I talk like I used to. And when I talk to my Hispanic friends, I live in a Hispanic part of New Mexico, and I develop a lilting Northern New Mexico accent. So it's an easy thing to do.
All right. Well, we were going to be talking about that Madrid Fault that runs through Missouri, but we had a volcano blow while we were sleeping. What's up with that?
Well, I did a little research. You're the one that alerted me to this morning, and we actually tweeted it a few minutes ago. A volcano along the Ring of Fire in eastern Java. It has been historically active, and it was... the last major eruption, I think, was in 1990. It erupted this morning and killed 3 people, put a lot of ash in the air, shut down 7 airports in the region because of the fear of ash getting in jet engines. Does not look like a very serious eruption right now. It is on land, so most of these Indonesian volcanoes that are extremely dangerous, like Krakatoa, are located in the ocean where they can be driven by steam explosions. So this one's on land, but it's still serious. We'll see how much ash it puts in the air, how high that goes. The last big one in that part of the world would have been Pinatubo in what year was that? 1994, if memory serves. And that actually changed the climate, cooled the earth for a couple of years, about a degree or a degree and a half centigrade.
You know, there's a movie out about Pompeii, or is about to come out.
I didn't know about that, but yeah, that's Mount Vesuvius, and that's probably one of the greatest threats to humanity. We talked about that, a month or so ago when we talked about the geological catastrophes waiting to happen.
Well, let's talk about that Madrid fault.
Okay.
All right. Now, what is the fault line? What geographical area, north to south, east to west? What are we talking about?
Well, it's mainly northeast trending, but it goes from northeastern Arkansas kind of through the boot heel of Missouri, where it's most active generally, and then touches Illinois. It's an intraplate seismic zone. It's actually called the New Madrid Seismic Zone. It's fault zone stretches for about 240 kilometers long. It's fairly shallow, 5 to 25 kilometers deep for the epicenters. But it produced four of the U.S. Largest known historical earthquakes from December of 1811 to February of 1812, somewhere ranges thought to been between 7.0 and 8.6 in these four earthquakes, and aftershocks continued until 1817. It's really thought to be quite a young feature, about 65,000 years or less. We know about earthquakes from geological evidence, of course, in 1811, 1450, 900, 300 AD, then 2350 BC, 3500 BC, 4800 BC. So pretty active in some sort of periodicity.
When was the last one? Because that's the only earthquake I've ever felt, and I felt it here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, the last major one would have been in 1968, and that was a 5.4. Certainly, I'm trying to do the math, you must be somewhere around, I would guess, 1,000 miles from St. Louis, maybe.
Yeah, but it wasn't the one in the 60s. This one was within the last 10 years. You know, hell, time flies when you're getting older, so... But I remember that one. It's the one that knocked some bricks off a few buildings in downtown Louisville. But I had gotten up particularly early that morning, and I was up in my office. And this house that I'm referring to had some rather unique construction. It we had about an 8-degree slope, and I didn't want the house to appear like it was down in a hole. So I actually had built a sub-basement, and it was a very tall house, and because it was elevated, they actually had augered down these, these things were huge, these tubes. There were like seven of them, and I had these big steel columns that were burrowed down to the bedrock, and then there was a concrete encasing those, and then the whole weight of the house sat on these columns that were anchored down to the bedrock. And then the house essentially floated, and great construction because, we didn't have any settlement cracks or anything, and my house didn't look like it was in a hole. It was right up there where I wanted it to be. Well, that morning, I'm sitting there in my office, and this was maybe 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden, I felt something. And it took me a few seconds, and then when I saw my monitors and everything shaking, I realized, hell, that's an earthquake. And then, sure enough, about a half hour later, news broke that there had been an earthquake in that Madrid fault.
Well, certainly it's you can feel those things. You know, a few years ago, I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning and south of Albuquerque, and I go, that felt like an earthquake. And sure enough, there was a small one on the other side of the mountains here about 60 miles away. I think it was a 4-point-something. I've been in a couple of big ones, and one in Chile and one in Peru, and it's not a very fun experience when you're close to one that's 7.0 or bigger. Both those killed people, but luckily I was 50 to 100 kilometers away from the epicenter. But yeah, when you're linked into the bedrock, and you know Atlanta's in the Piedmont, it's in very hard metamorphic rocks is the bedrock, so those seismic waves will propagate a long ways.
Well, I just remember when I realized it was an earthquake, it felt like it was very, very deep below me.
Yeah, well, with your anchoring into the bedrock, I'm sure it would feel like that.
But, you know, I had neighbors that didn't feel a thing, and I think it was because of the construction of that house. And I had a staircase tower, and there was one little area where some sheetrock had separated during that earthquake. So I went and put in a clapboard roof in that area for the next one, but never felt the next one. Although occasionally we will feel some small ones that are coming out of the Smoky Mountains. But the listeners want to hear about Madrid, so back to that one.
Since 1812, There was a 6.0 in 1843, a 6.6 in 1895, and the aforementioned one in 1968, which was well over order of magnitude smaller than those. But it's related to a bunch of old faults from the breakup of Rodinia. And that was one of these supercontinents that we've talked about before, broke up with the end of Snowball Earth at 750 million years. There's also evidence that that this zone was active about 200 million years ago, and then quieted down and has been active in the recent past 65,000 years or less. It's part of an intracontinental rift, so it's a failed rift zone related to the continental collision, continental breakup, continental collision. We see these failed rifts in the middle of continents happen quite often. For instance, I live in a zone here right now called the Rio Grande Rift, and that's an active intercontinental rift, but at some point it's likely to fail, but it will always remain a fundamental flaw in the Earth's crust. This one's called the Real Foot Rift, and it consists of a northeast zone that goes basically from New Madrid, Missouri, and the Boot Heel down into northeastern Arkansas on a right lateral strikes at fault. Then there's a cross fault that goes northwest, and it's a big low angle reverse fault or a thrust fault southwest end is overriding the northeast side, and then it turns again with a step to the north into another northeast trending right lateral strikes at fault. And so all this would happen in northeast Arkansas, southeast Missouri, a little bit in Tennessee, and then go up toward the Illinois, toward Cairo, Illinois, if you're familiar with that part of the world. But this is a zone where a lot of people live, and a big one could be quite dangerous.
Is it the Madrid fault or the New Madrid fault? What are we calling it?
Well, it's the New Madrid seismic zone, so it's got a bunch of names for various parts of it. There's the Real Foot Rift and the Real Foot Fault and the New Madrid seismic zone, and then there's an extension way up toward Evansville, Indiana. They call the Wabash Valley seismic zone. So, you know, these things are—they're not a single fault. They are fault zones. They are zones of movement and seismicity. So it's best not to think of them as single faults, but zones of faults.
All right, and you said it's related to Rodinia. For the listeners who may not know, Rodinia was the supercontinent that preceded Pangaea, correct?
Right. Rodinia was a supercontinent, and I'm going to guess right now, because if memory serves, existed from about 14 or 15 100 million years to about 750 million years. It broke up, and then Pangaea was formed in the mid-Paleozoic time, and then it broke up. So you have this constant plate tectonic motion where you form these supercontinents, and then they break up and spread apart and then form back together again. So this would have been the second youngest, I should say, supercontinent that we know about.
Are we spreading, or the continents spreading right now, or are they starting to come back?
Well, they're continuing to spread in one direction and be consumed in the other. So it's thought that in about another 250 million years, we'll have another supercontinent formed. So it depends on what part of the earth you're involved in. There's continental collision going on in the Himalayas. There's the Mid-Atlantic Ridge Spreading Center. There's subduction zone in South America and far northern North America, but with a spreading center in the Sea of Cortez in Mexico. So continents are always being subducted. Oceanic plate, I should say, being subducted under continents. So in one direction, you're consuming oceanic plate, and other parts of it, you're consuming it. So that's a tough question for me to answer right now. Are we moving toward a supercontinent or continuing to spread? Well, we're doing both.
I understand. Mm-hmm. For our listeners living in that Arkansas area, when the New Madrid goes again, are we due for a big boy or another relatively minor one?
Well, boy, that's a tough question. You know, this is, you know, when you asked me to do this, I said, I don't know if I can fill a long segment because we just don't know very much about this. It's buried under young sediments of the Mississippi River. So we don't have a lot of rocks to look at. It's in a part of the world where there's not a lot of outcrop. There's a puzzle because for geologists because there's not much movement, only about 0.2 millimeters a year. Compare that to the average on the San Andreas Fault of 37 millimeters a year, so about 180 times less movement. There have been proposals that this is dying out. There, by some universities in the area, USGS still rates this as one of the most hazardous parts of North America. So that's a hard question to answer. I think if there is a big one, if you live in Memphis, you're in trouble. If you live in northeastern Arkansas, probably less so, but because there's so, you know, that's not a very populated part of the world. So, but certainly Memphis, it would be the focus for devastation. Cairo, Illinois, and then some of the small towns and villages in the Boot Hill of Missouri.
I know the Mississippi River is trying to bypass New Orleans, and the Army Corps of Engineers has been doing its best to keep the Mississippi on its present course, but the Mississippi over the centuries does vacillate down there in the Gulf of Mexico. Would an event like a big earthquake at the New Madrid cause the Mississippi to overtake the Army Corps' efforts to keep it from moving?
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility, but probably of more concern would be the area in the Boot Hill, so of Missouri and down to where the Arkansas River flows into the Mississippi. In these 1811, 1812 earthquakes, the river actually flowed backwards in a part of it and created Real Foot Lake, which exists to this day. It changed its course drastically. And so with the management of the Mississippi River and the attempts by the Army Corps of Engineers to channel it, this could be quite a devastating affair. I mean, look what happens every time we have big snowpacks in the northern Rockies and the Missouri River floods and all that river water comes down past St. Charles, Missouri and flows in the Mississippi and creates this massive flooding and from, say, Alton, Illinois down into northern Arkansas and eastern Tennessee. You know, we have problems with this all the time, so certainly a big earthquake could create real problems with the levees along the Mississippi.
Now, you threw out the term continental rift. Was that correct?
Yes, an intracontinental rift, which would basically mean something within the continent. And that's what this is. It's a failed intracontinental rift. There's some evidence, geophysical evidence, that this real foot rift is perhaps has magmas underneath it, and that may have something to do with the movement. There's, you know, these fundamental flaws in the Earth's crust never go away, and they can become inactive and they can become active again because they generally plumb deep in through the crust into the mantle where you have molten rock or certainly plastic rocks and that flow like under great heat and temperature and flow like they're liquid. So this is a very long-lived geological feature that's not going to go away. It's going to be here for the history of the Earth, and we've already talked about how long that is.
Well, what is a continental rift or intercontinental rift?
Well, it means that it's where the continent is attempting to spread apart. So in the past, there was, through plate tectonic movements, a rift in the continental plate. You know, this is not that far away from the suture zone of the Ouachita Mountains, which leads up into the Appalachians. You know, those features are generally 300 million years old or something like that. So an attempt for the continent to spread apart. I'm living in one right now. I'm right in the middle of the Rio Grande Rift, and that's an incipient, a very young intracontinental rift where the continent's trying to spread apart. Now, this in the real foot, that is now a compressive zone, probably very distantly related to the fact that we're continuing to subduct the Pacific plate under North American plate. You have, wherever you have spreading, you're going to have collision, compression in one other part. So we know we have spreading in the East Pacific Rise, which is the Sea of Cortez, Baja California area. We know we have a very wide spreading province in the western U.S., the Basin and Range, which culminates on the east side and where I live in the Rio Grande Rift. And so those spreading centers that we have result in compression in other areas, and certainly the real foot rift now is a compressive zone because, as I mentioned before, this northwest trending thrust fault is overriding rocks from the southwest toward the northeast.
Lastly, and we're down to about 2 minutes, you sent me a geological map. Was that an earthquake zone map?
Yeah, it's a earthquake hazards map from the USGS.
What was that big red blob off the coast of South Carolina?
Well, that's actually near Charleston, South Carolina, and there was a historic earthquake in, I read about this a couple of days ago, in the perhaps late 1800s or early 1900s, a significant earthquake that killed a bunch of people, did a bunch of damage in South Carolina. It was not a particularly large earthquake in the 6 to 6.5 range, I think. And a lot of this has to do with construction. I mean, one of the most deadly earthquakes we've had recently was in Iran. It was a 6.5, and it killed 250,000 people because they all live in mud huts that aren't stabilized adobes. So presumably at the time, the construction in Charleston was not particularly well made, and a bunch of buildings crumbled. I mean, that's why you put your posts down into anchored them into bedrock for your basement. So you're living in an earthquake proof house. you know, I live in a 98-year-old adobe house in New Mexico, and if we had a big one here, I'd be in danger. Luckily, we're not in a particularly heavy seismic zone. We do have 5.0s or something on occasion. There's a magma body about 100 kilometers south in Socorro that's deep, about 40 kilometers deep. And every once in a while when that magma moves around, we'll get some earthquakes around here. But a lot of it has to do with building construction.
We've been speaking with Mickey Pope. Mickey is our mercenary geologist. The mercenarygeologist.com. Is that the correct website, Mickey?
It certainly is.
All right. Thanks, Mickey. Have a wonderful weekend, buddy.
All right. See you soon in Las Vegas.
All right. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. This is Alan Butler, Butler on Business. Thank you very much for listening.